I want to start with a scenario that, well, it unfortunately drives a lot of researchers to drink. You have a new cancer drug. In the lab, it's a miracle. You give it to a mouse with a tumor, the tumor just vanishes, the mouse is running around happy, and, everyone thinks they've found the cure. Then you spend millions of dollars to start a human clinical trial. You give that same drug to a person, and nothing happens. Or worse, it's toxic.
Ah, the infamous translational gap. It's the valley of death for drug development.
Exactly. We are so good at curing cancer in mice, we're still struggling to do it in humans. And for years, the assumption was just, well, biology is complicated. But today, we're looking at a set of patent applications that argue the problem isn't just biology, it's a translation error. We've been using the wrong dictionary.
It's a really compelling argument. We're doing a deep dive into three interconnected patents by an inventor per Magnus Swedenborg.
Okay.
And this isn't your standard, let's just throw more AI at the problem kind of pitch. Swedenborg is proposing something he calls a physics-constrained sim-to-real engine.
Which, I have to be honest, sounds like total buzzword soup. Physics constrained, sim to real. What are we actually building?
We're building a machine that can predict how a human tumor will grow, based almost entirely on data from mice. But the key is that it doesn't just treat the mouse like a small human. It treats the mouse as a distinct physical system with its own laws of physics, its own sense of time, and it builds this mathematical bridge over to the human reality.
So it's a translator, but instead of translating, say, French to English, it's translating mouse biology to human biology.
Precisely. And to make that translation work, the patents identify three specific ways that standard AI models just completely fail. They call them mismatches. You've got a biological mismatch, a physics mismatch that involves time, and then a data mismatch, which is all about uncertainty.
Okay, let's tackle these one by one because that first one, the biological mismatch, it addresses something I think a lot of people just overlook. When we test drugs on mice, we aren't usually giving the mouse cancer, are we?
No, not at all. The gold standard is something called a patient-derived xenograft, or PDX. You take a biopsy of a human tumor, say from a lung cancer patient, and you graft it onto a mouse.
So it's human cells growing inside a mouse. In theory, that should be giving us human data.
In theory. But, biology is messy. A tumor isn't just a ball of cancer cells floating in a void. It needs a support system. Blood vessels, connective tissue, what are called fibroblasts. This whole structure is called the stroma.
Right, the stroma. So you implant the human tumor. What happens to that human stroma?
It dies. The human support cells, they just can't survive in the mouse environment. So the mouse's body rushes in to fill the gap. It builds its own blood vessels and its own connective tissue to support this foreign tumor.
So you end up with a chimera. The cancer cells are human, but the house they're living in is, well, it's built by the mouse.
Architectural takeover is a great way to put it. And here's where the AI gets completely confused. If you take a genetic snapshot of that tumor, you're capturing the human signals, yes, but you are also capturing massive amounts of mouse signals, mouse blood vessel growth, mouse immune responses.
And if you train a standard AI on that mess.
The AI finds a shortcut. It might learn, okay, a tumor grows fast when a certain gene is active, but if that gene is a mouse gene driving mouse blood vessels, well, that rule is totally meaningless in a human patient. This causes what's called negative transfer. The model works great on the mouse data, but then you move it to a human and it fails because it's looking for mouse signals that just aren't there.
It's like learning to drive in a video game where, I don't know, gravity works differently, and then trying to drive a real car. You're gonna crash.
So how does Swedenborg solve this? You can't just pick the mouse cells out with tweezers.
You do it mathematically. The patent describes something called a domain separation network. Imagine you have two suitcases. The whole goal is to pack every single piece of data into one of those two suitcases, one for the human stuff, one for the mouse stuff.
Close. One suitcase is the shared suitcase. This is for the biology that's true for both species, the fundamental cancer drivers, the cell division pathways, the stuff that makes cancer, cancer. The second suitcase is the private suitcase, and that's for all these species-specific junk, the mouse stroma, the mouse immune artifacts, all of it.
But here's my question. How does the AI know which is which? It's not like the genes come with little flags saying, I'm from a
It
mouse.
learns by fighting itself. This is the really, really clever part. They use a gradient reversal layer. Think of it as an adversarial game. You have the encoder, which is packing that shared suitcase, and then you have a discriminator, a judge.
And the judge's job is to spot the mouse.
Exactly. The judge looks at the shared suitcase and tries to guess, is this from a mouse or a human? And if the judge can guess correctly, the encoder gets punished.
So the encoder is being forced to strip away any fingerprint that identifies the species.
Precisely. It has to scrub the data until it is what they call domain invariant. It leaves only the pure biology that applies to both. So by the end of training, you have a signal that is purely about the cancer, not about the host it was growing in.
That's fascinating. It's like active unlearning. But even if you strip away the mouse stroma, you still have a mouse host. And mice are, well, they're twitchy. They live fast.
They do. And this brings us to the second mismatch, which I think is probably the most innovative part of this whole stack.
Yeah.
They call it the time dilation glitch.
This involves Kleiber's law, right? I sort of remember this from biology class.
Right. Kleiber's law. It describes how metabolism scales with size. And basically, as an animal gets bigger, it gets more efficient, so its metabolic rate slows down. A mouse just burns through life so much faster than a human. Its heart beats faster. Its cells divide faster. Everything is accelerated.
So a fast-growing tumor in a human might take, I don't know, months to double in size. In a mouse, that same doubling could happen in days.
Correct. And this creates a massive headache for AI. Let's say you're looking at a proliferation marker, a gene like Ki-67 that just says cells are dividing. In the data, a high level of Ki-67 looks statistically identical in a mouse and a human. It's just a number.
But the meaning of that number is completely different. High in a mouse means warp speed. High in a human means brisk walk.
Exactly. Now imagine you take that domain separation network we just talked about, and you tell it to align the mouse data with the human data. If you force it to align the speed to make the timelines match, the model just panics.
Why? What actually happens mathematically?
The Batten calls it representational collapse.
Yeah.
You're basically asking the model to solve an impossible equation. You're saying, make this fast thing equal this slow thing, but don't change the definition of speed. The model tries to contort the data to make it fit, and the information, the variance, just drops to zero.
So the model just gives up and outputs a flat line.
It's worse. It creates numerical instability. The calculus engine, the part of the model that simulates growth over time, it starts dividing by near zero numbers or, you know, shooting off into infinity. The Batten actually quantified this. When they tried to force this alignment, the predictive power of the model, the R squared, it crashed from roughly var 0.9 down to 0.5. It became a coin flip.
Wow. Just because they tried to force the mouse to run on human time. So the solution seems obvious. Just don't do that.
Easier said than done for an algorithm.
Yeah.
But they developed something called biophysically grounded selective alignment.
That sounds impressive.
It basically means giving the AI a blacklist. The system identifies a specific set of genes related to the cell cycle genes that control speed. It calculates a proliferation metric, and then it tells that adversarial judge we mentioned earlier, ignore these genes.
So it aligns the type of cancer, but it ignores the speed of the cancer.
Yes. It allows the mouse data to be fast and the human data to be slow inside the same model. It treats them as mechanistically incompatible. It respects the physics of the organism rather than trying to mash them together.
That is a crucial distinction. It's acknowledging that time is relative, you know, biologically speaking. Okay, so we've cleaned the biology and we've respected the time difference, but we still have to deal with the quality of the data itself.
The data mismatch. This is the practical nightmare of any clinical research.
Right. Mouse data is perfect. You can scan the mouse every day. You can take samples whenever you want. Human data is sparse.
Sparse is a polite way to put it. You might see a patient for a scan and then not see them again for 3 months. Plus, you have missing pieces. Maybe you have the genetic sequencing, but you don't have the proteomics. Or you have the MRI, but not the biopsy.
And usually AI handles missing data by guessing. It just imputes the value.
It hallucinates it. And in a lot of fields, that's fine. If ChatGPT hallucinates a detail in a story, it's annoying. If a cancer model hallucinates a protein level that isn't there, a patient could get the wrong dose.
So how does Swedenborg's system handle this? Because you can't just leave the data blank. The model needs inputs.
They use a technique called probabilistic encoder self-distillation, or PESD. It's a teacher-student model.
Okay, walk me through the classroom. Who's the teacher? Who's the student?
The teacher is a version of the model that has access to everything, all the data layers, the perfect ideal scenario. The student is the model that only sees the messy, incomplete clinical data you actually get.
And the student tries to copy the teacher.
Yes, but with a very specific rule. And this is the key. It's called one-sided calibration loss. Usually you'd punish the student if it gets the answer wrong. Here, the system punishes the student if it's more confident than it should be.
Wait, so if the student says, I think the answer is X, but I'm purely guessing, that's okay?
Yes, that is perfectly acceptable. But if the student says the answer is definitely X, and the teacher knows that, based on the limited data, there's no way the student could possibly be that sure, the student gets penalized. Heavily.
Well, it's training the AI to be humble.
It's training for calibrated uncertainty. You want the model to say, based on this sparse data, the tumor might shrink, or it might grow, and here is my wide margin of error. That is actionable for a doctor. Confident but wrong is lethal. Uncertain and honest, that allows a doctor to order more tests.
That is a massive shift in philosophy. Usually we sell AI on how smart it is. This is selling AI on how well it knows its own limits.
Which is the mark of true intelligence, isn't it?
Fair point. So we have the ingredients, we've filtered the input, corrected for time, calibrated the uncertainty. Now we have to actually run the simulation. We need to predict the future. And this is where the physics constrained part really kicks in.
We aren't just predicting a line on a graph. The patents describe a simulation engine that uses something called separated state dynamics.
Which just means breaking the problem into pieces.
Two main pieces. First, total burden, which is just how big is the tumor. And second, clonal fractions, which is who is inside the tumor.
Because tumors aren't just one thing. They have different subpopulations or clones all competing for space.
Exactly. And this creates a math problem called identifiability. Imagine a tumor is large. Is it large because it started huge and just grew slowly? Or did it start microscopic and grow explosively? If you just look at the size, you can't tell.
And if the AI guesses wrong on the why, the prediction for next month will be totally wrong.
Correct. So by separating the size calculation from the competition calculation, the system avoids getting confused. It actually uses game theory, specifically something called replicator dynamics, to model the competition between the cells.
Replicator dynamics. But that makes sure the math reflects reality, right? Like the percentages have to add up to 100%.
That's the simplex constraint. It sounds jargony, but it's simple. If clone A grows to take up 60% of the tumor, clone B has to shrink. Standard neural networks don't know that rule. They might predict clone A is 60% and clone B is 70%, which is, you know, impossible. This system forces the math to obey the pie chart rule.
So it effectively locks the AI in a room with a physics textbook and says, you can't leave until your prediction obeys these laws. But I have to play devil's advocate here. We're talking about predicting these complex biological systems years into the future. Even with all these constraints, eventually the simulation is going to drift. It's going to lose the plot.
You're absolutely right. Chaos theory applies. Small errors compound over time. And that is why the third major component of this whole simulation engine is the trust layer.
The patent calls this time-dependent trust reversion.
It's a safety net. The system calculates a trust score that decays exponentially the further out it predicts. Think of it like a fog rolling in. You can see 5 feet in front of you, clearly. 50 feet is blurry. 5 miles is a total guess.
So what does the model do when the fog gets too thick?
It stops trying to be a hero. It slowly reverts its prediction back to the population baseline.
The average?
The average behavior for that specific cancer type. So if the model is predicting 5 years out, and its trust score has dropped to below a certain threshold, it stops relying on a specific simulation of your tumor and starts blending it with the average outcome for patients like you.
That prevents the flying off the rails scenario where the model predicts the tumor grows to the size of a watermelon or vanishes instantly for no reason.
Exactly. It bounds the prediction within the realm of biological plausibility. It's similar to how self-driving cars handle uncertainty. If the cameras get covered in mud, the car doesn't speed up and guess where the road is. It slows down and defaults to a safe state.
There was one other safety feature I wanted to ask about, oscillation damping. It sounded like shock absorbers for the math.
That's a great analogy. Sometimes these calculus engines, the ODE solvers, they get stuck in a loop. They start outputting numbers that wiggle up and down. Growth, shrinkage, very, very rapidly.
Which doesn't happen in real tumors.
No, tumors don't vibrate. So the system watches for these spurious oscillations. If it sees the curve getting jagged, it applies a damping factor to smooth it out. It forces the prediction to look like biological growth, not numerical noise.
It really seems like they've thought of every possible way this could break. But there is one final hurdle. We've been talking about cancer in general. But lung cancer is different from breast cancer, which is different from melanoma. Do we have to build a separate physics-constrained engine for every single disease?
That would be the traditional way, and it would be prohibitively expensive. But the second source document introduces a technique called FILM, that's F-I-L-M, feature-wise linear modulation.
I love that acronym. So how does film solve the variety problem?
Think of the model as a generic tumor understanding engine. It knows how cells divide, how they compete, how they die. That's the core machinery. Film allows you to slide a specific lens over that machinery. Imagine a pair of glasses that just distorts the view slightly. Hmm. You have a lung cancer lens, a breast cancer lens. These layers, they modulate the neural network. They just tweak the parameters enough to adapt the generic engine to the specific disease.
And the patent mentioned these layers are initialized to zero. Why does that matter?
That's the really cool part. Initialized to zero means that when you start training, the lens is clear. It does nothing. The model starts as a pure generic simulator. And as it learns, it only adds the tint that is absolutely necessary for that specific cancer.
So it's efficient. It doesn't have to relearn how to be a tumor every time. It just learns, oh, in breast cancer, this growth factor is slightly more potent.
It learns the delta, the difference, rather than the whole book. This lets one single architecture scale across dozens of cancer types.
So let's pull this all together. We aren't just talking about a better algorithm here. We're talking about a fundamental shift in how we think about AI in medicine.
We are moving from black box AI to gray box AI.
Gray box?
A black box is data in, prediction out, don't ask how. A white box is pure physics equations, fully understood. This is the middle ground. It uses the learning power of neural networks to handle the messiness of biology, but it constrains them with the iron laws of physics conservation of mass, metabolic scaling, time decay.
It feels like the AI is finally growing up. It's not just memorizing patterns anymore. It's being forced to understand the rules of the road.
And if I can leave you with one thought that goes beyond cancer, think about what we just discussed. We solved the problem of translating data from a small, fast-lived species, the mouse, to a large, slow-lived species, the human.
Right.
We rely on animal data for everything. Alzheimer's research in mice, heart disease in pigs, toxicology in rats. This translational gap isn't just a cancer problem, it's a medicine problem.
You're saying this physics-constrained approach could be the key to unlocking all of that data.
If we can successfully separate the species signal and mathematically correct for the metabolic time difference, we might be looking at a universal translator for biology. We could potentially make animal testing infinitely more predictive for every disease, not just oncology.
That is a staggering possibility, a universal translator for the animal kingdom. We started with a broken drug trial, and we ended up with a roadmap for the future of medicine.
It's a fascinating time to be watching this space.
Absolutely. Thank you for walking us through the physics, the mice, and the math. And to our listener, thanks for deep diving with us. Let us know, would you trust your diagnosis to a physics-constrained AI? Something to think about. See you on the next one.